Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Woo, woo!
Good Tuesday morning, everybody. Hope your day is off to a fantastic start.
Woo, woo!
I'm looking at the TV again here right now, and they're already starting to promo the last couple of episodes of The Last Dance coming up Sunday at 6 o'clock on ESPN. Ooh. And the ESPN app. And, Key, I feel the same way, man. I can't believe it's almost over.
Yeah, it is. It's over, but you know what? It probably should be over because there's only so much, right, content out of this that you can take. I mean, there's only so much. And it probably should be over, and we should move on to the next thing. Like, I would love to see the Donald Sterling Clipper piece. Mm-hmm. You know, the black ball, I think that's what it's called. Mm-hmm. I'd move on to that and then bring out another one. You know, maybe you fast-track something else that was sitting in the pipe. So I'm okay with it. I mean, I guess I have to be when it comes to the realizations of it's going to end at some point. So you might as well end it, and let's see what else is out there.
Well, they started to promo the next big three. We've seen the Lance Armstrong one, the Bruce Lee one, the home run, the Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa one, and all three of those look fantastic.
I thought the home run one was already out before.
No, this is a new one.
Oh, this is a new one.
I'm a new one. So excited for the Bruce Lee doc. So excited. Because, one, you know, obviously we weren't really alive, you know, when Bruce
was
dominated pop culture.
I saw Bruce Lee.
We weren't aware. Man,
I seen him whoop Kareem's.
We weren't that aware when Bruce Lee was like really rolling. And so there's so much myth and so many questions that I don't
know,
that I would love to see like his whole backstory and obviously the circumstances around his death. I would love to see him interacting with the Kareem or, you know, Will Chamberlain or whoever the heck he was interacting with throughout the years. I'm stoked most about the Bruce Lee.
You don't even know the signature move.
What is it?
What is it, Key?
Take your left hand, roll it down, take your right hand, roll it up, and take it, flick right on the side of the nose. Wah! And shake your head all at once. Come on, one, two, three. Wah!
You sure that's not the Karate Kid?
No. That's Bruce Lee. Bruce Lee would take that arm and drop it and take that and then flick his and then he shake that head at the same time. Woo! Man, I was a Bruce Leer. Channel 13, KCOP.
Yeah, I do remember those things on Channel 13. That's true. All right. The odds to win NFL MVP for the 2020 season are out, according to Caesars in Las Vegas. And Patrick Mahomes is the heavy, heavy favorite. He's at 4-1. And the list is kind of what you would expect. It's Mahomes at the top. Lamar Jackson is number two. Of course, he's the defending MVP. He comes in at 13-2. And it's all quarterbacks. It's Dak Prescott, Russell Wilson, Tom Brady, Kyler Murray, Drew Brees in order after that. Have we gotten to the point where we're just, it's going to be a quarterback and that's the end of it? It's a quarterback exclusive award at this point.
Well, it really always has been. Every now and then you get one guy who emerges at the running back spot or one guy who has a big, big number from a receiver standpoint, or maybe there's a defensive player that comes. But at the end of the day, they always give it to a quarterback. You know, I don't think – for me personally, I think Lamar Jackson takes a step back in year three. Mm. I think Tom Brady, depending on how well he does in Tampa – could become the front runner just because of the hype, the PR behind it, the story. Patrick Mahomes is probably the clear-cut favorite. Kyler Murray's not big enough for the – no pun intended – in the game in particular to even really get – Arizona's got to go to the Super Bowl for him to even really be a threat in terms of that. I think, though, when you start looking at the top three to round them off, you're going to have Russell Wilson, Patrick Mahomes, and Tom Brady are going to be in the three. And everybody else depends on how their seasons is really going. But to start out, those are going to be the three that are being pushed heavily.
Dak Prescott is 9-1.
Yeah, he's there. I mean, he's there. But, I mean, for all we know, Andy Dalton's the starter week one. I don't think that'll happen. But, you know, you just don't know with the way the Cowboys may end up. The Cowboys may decide that they're going to have lean heavy on Ezekiel Elliott and just run to the Super Bowl, and not even though they're paying Dak Press $30+ million, Prescott, they may not want to utilize him in a scheme of things like that. They may go with a different philosophy. You just don't really know what they might do in Dallas.
I'm really surprised that Tom Brady's eyes are so, you know,
long.
He's not like leading the pack, because if they go to the postseason, he's the reason why, right? Like, nothing else significant really.
Well, it's all a setup, though. It's a build up
of the QB. So I'm really shocked.
It's just a build up
that they don't have him as the front runner.
It's a build up. That's all. You can't put him as a front runner. You got to let it build up, because if it builds up, it's hard to take it away.
A couple of things. Number one, I think the Patrick Mahomes at the top is obvious for all the things that we've talked about. And I know I've said this a few times, but I truly believe it. And you see, this is just another thing that makes me believe that I'm right. We're at the beginning of a run for the Chiefs. And I shouldn't even say at the beginning. We're in the middle of the beginning. In other words, we're talking AFC Championship game 2 years ago. We're talking Super Bowl champ last year. He went from MVP to Super Bowl champ to Super Bowl MVP to being the odds-on favorite to win the MVP here in this season. It just feels like that dude and that team are going to be at the top of these lists for a very, very long time. This, like, to your point, Key, you said Lamar Jackson, you think that he might back up a little bit. It wouldn't shock me if 3 years from now Lamar Jackson is not in these conversations. If he still were there, I wouldn't be shocked either. But if he fell out, I wouldn't be stunned. I would be flabbergasted if 3 years from now you looked up and Patrick Mahomes still wasn't near the top of these MVP odds.
No, I think Patrick Mahomes will be at the top. I think Patrick Mahomes had an opportunity to win it last year. He just got hurt, missed some games. So it became one of those deals where the momentum or the stuff kind of faded on him as Lamar Jackson continued to mesmerize our eyes with his dazzling play. And so when you see something new like that, that you haven't seen at that position in such a long time, you feel like, wow, this is really cool. That's kind of what happened with the Lamar Jackson situation. Look, Lamar Jackson is a phenomenal player. There's no question about it. He deserves to play the position and do it the way he's doing it, because it doesn't mean that you can't do it multiple different ways and get positive results. I just believe that the people that make these decisions on who wins the MVP lean more toward the Patrick Mahomes, Tom Brady, Russell Wilson type situation, because they're in their head, this is what a quarterback is supposed to look like, opposed to a guy like Lamar Jackson running around, rushing for over 1,000 yards. They ain't not going to keep having that happen, okay? Well, the guy won the MVP, and you ain't seen him on TV yet, have you?
Mm-hmm.
So remember what I told you. They ain't trying to promote that. They ain't trying to promote that.
Well, he is
Why
definitely
he doesn't have a
challenge.
Cadillac commercial?
He's definitely a challenge. I wrote about this months ago.
You didn't ask about that.
Well, I'm telling you about it. I wrote about it months ago. And the question that I posed was, you know, how is the NFL going to embrace a Lamar Jackson MVP? Because he's a different kind of athlete, to Key's point. And it's difficult to find the traditional methods of promotion to fit into what Lamar Jackson is. But I think he's going to take a step back for one simple reason. They all do. They all take statistical step backs. You know, I did a cursory glance of just the quarterbacks that have won MVPs in their follow-up seasons. They're all a step back, and that's including Patrick Mahomes. Now, part of that has to do with the fact that he missed some games, but the other part is that even when he was playing, his pace was off from the year before. That's just what happens, but he's got the Super Bowl ring, so who cares? Listen, the Chiefs have been on a run, to your point, Travis, ever since they hired Andy Reid.
Yep.
They've only not gotten 10 wins once since he was hired in 2013. What's been awesome is that he's been able to sustain this run with a quarterback switch. That's the awesome part.
Okay, guys, let's do this real quick. Look at the guys that we just mentioned, Mahomes, Jackson, Prescott, Wilson, Brady, Murray, and Breeze. Give me somebody, and long shot to be sure, because these are the top seven players here. Give me somebody that's not on that list, Key, that you wouldn't be absolutely stunned. It's a long shot, and some stuff would have to break his way. Who's a long shot MVP candidate coming into the season?
Matt Ryan.
Why?
Matt Ryan, Drew Brees. Matt Ryan could turn the corner back to his MVP year of getting his team back to the Super Bowl. They've retooled some stuff on defenses. Julio Jones is still there. Riley's still there. I mean, he could potentially switch things around from a year ago and look like a different quarterback because he has the ability to do that. Now, Drew Brees is obviously going to be Drew Brees. I mean, he's going to. You know, it's his last year. They kind of, I'm sure they're going to want to try to send him out, if in fact it is his last year, send him out with a bang. The team's going to be in the hunt for the Super Bowl, and he's going to have to do his part for them to be in that hunt. So I wouldn't be surprised if those two guys are in the mix.
Say this guy is pretty obvious, and he's our homegrown guy right here, Jared Goff.
That's who I was going to say too, LZ, and here's
why. Not going to happen.
They've got 5 primetime games, which means everybody's going to see it. Yep. They have very modest expectations coming into the season. They've taken away arguably his number one weapon in Todd Gurley. If you take all of those things together and he goes out there and they win that division and he's the reason they're winning that division, he absolutely is in the conversation.
Problem is I don't believe that the people that make the decisions like him like that. At the quarter, he starts off with a negative. They're never going to give him the love.
I just don't agree with that at all, Key.
So when he doesn't get the love, when you don't get the love, you start off behind everybody to begin with. You know, people like Kyler, people like Tua Tagovailoa, he gets the love. Kyler Murray gets the love. Derek Goff does not get love. When you don't get love. And it takes you that far behind everybody else, and it takes you a minute to move forward in these situations.
Lamar Jackson's the MVP. There's no greater
Lamar Jackson's the MVP because Lamar Jackson caught everybody by storm. That's why Lamar Jackson's the MVP.
But there's no greater proof though that your theory that you need love to MVP is off.
Let's come back and continue the conversation. We'll talk about why that Jackson is different or why he's not different or who gets the love or who doesn't. We're going to get to that as well. Plus, Scott Burrell, former teammate of Michael Jordan's. You saw him all over episodes 7 and 8. He's scheduled to join us next on the morning show on 710 ESPN. All right, so for the better part of a month, we've been spending a lot of time talking about the fantastic docuseries on ESPN, The Last Dance, a man who was featured prominently last weekend. Scott Burrell spent 8 years in the NBA, including a championship season, 97-98 with the Bulls, joins us now on the Sprint People's Hotline. Scott, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, guys. How are you guys doing today?
Good, man. Glad you could join us.
Hey, thank you for having me.
I'm sure your phone lines have been going crazy here in the last month or so with this Last Dance. And obviously you were featured all over the place in feature episode number 7. What was it? I really want to know. I mean, obviously I know Michael Jordan personally, but I never played with him. What was it like having the opportunity to just be in the same locker room with him?
It's nerve wracking at first because a new guy going to a team that's been on top for the longest time. You know, you just try to fit in, but he doesn't make it easy. He goes at me the first day and throughout the year. But you learn so much. It's an honor. It's a learning experience that you carry throughout life too. But I love the challenges that he brought me every day. Because it made me a better player and a better person.
Did you ever feel like you need, if you did or didn't, did you ever feel like, man, you know what, man, this dude say one more thing to me, I'm telling you, I don't care who he is, I'm going to put hands on him. Did you ever feel like that?
I love my job too much. I'm humble enough to know that it was never personal. It was all talking trash, and it was all fun, banter, and joking manner majority of the time. But then if it was in practice, it just counted people. And it never got physical. I mean, people like you just asking, Key, did I ever feel like I wanted to fight him? No, because it never got that to that point of anger and frustration. If someone's trying to make you better, accept it and get better. And I needed to.
Can you talk a little bit about the differences in culture? You started your career with Charlotte. You go to the Golden State Warriors, and then you're in Chicago. besides just the wins and losses, what are the differences in culture that you saw?
In the coaching staff, I would say when I was in Charlotte, I had Alan Bristow and Dave Collins, then Rick Adelman and Golden State. I think when you go to Chicago and Phil, I think they pay attention to detail more than any staff I've been on. And those other coaching staffs were great. But when you're the champs, there's a reason why you're the champs, not just because you have three Hall of Famers, because every other team has some great players on it. But when you get those personalities and you blend them together to be a cohesive unit and you and people respect everything you do and you know when to be hard and when to be to pull back the reins a little bit, it's a great mixture. And I think Phil was great at doing that and letting guys be themselves, but at the same time, leading the team. He wasn't the guy that yelled because everybody was afraid of Michael or knew Michael was going to come at them if they didn't do the job. So Phil's job was easier. But when you have a great leader like that, it makes it easier for a coach to run a team.
Scott Burrell was a member of the 97-98 Bulls, joining us here on The Morning Show. And obviously, Michael is a unique category, both as a player and as a competitor. Did you ever have any teammate on any of your other teams that even came close to his level of competitiveness?
No. That's why I loved it, because you want, as all athletes, you should want to be the best. You want to be pushed by the best. It doesn't matter what they say. I mean, they're not coming at you in a personal way, but I loved it that he came at me. But it's not just any person coming at you. It's Michael Jordan, the best player to ever play the sport, and it's a pretty big world out there. So if he's coming at me with advice in a harsh manner, take it, learn. Because I needed it. I wasn't, like you said, I've never played for any coaches like that, any players that have been where he's been. And I tell people all the time, people weren't going to beat the Chicago Bulls when he played other teams. They were going to beat Michael Jordan, the best player to ever play. Because they weren't saying, I'm beating Scott Burrell, Tony Kukoc, Scottie Pippen. I want to kick Michael Jordan's butt. That's what they were saying after the game. So he had that pride, that factor he had to worry about, plus winning the game every time he stepped on the court.
When players are on the team or you're on the team with the Bulls, obviously, did people feel as though, because Jordan was Jordan, that if you gave any type of pushback, that your days would be numbered? Is that why the control was such?
No, I don't think people worry about that. I mean, I just don't think he was – how can you – like I said, it wasn't anything personal. He was trying to make you better. Trash talk is trash talk. And you can go to the park right now. All kids don't play in the park right now because for these reasons. They're afraid of being to be challenged. So
yeah, but Scott, trash talk is trash talk, because I was one of the biggest ones in terms of when I played my sport. You know, I trashed. Michael put his hands on somebody not only once but twice. So when you get physical with it, and like with Steve Kerr and Will Perdue, that's taking it to another level. So I'm like –
I agree with that. It is, but I think they fought back. They threw blows at each other, but it didn't happen to me, and I never saw it. And maybe Michael learned from doing that. Don't do it. That's going too far. But at the same time, it never happened to me, so I didn't have to worry about that. Because, like I said, there's a point that you do cross that it becomes an issue, but I never got close to that point.
How exactly did he make you better? People say that all the time about playing with Michael Jordan, but. What were you like as a baller before you got to Chicago, and how did you leave?
That's a great question. I was a pretty good athlete, could shoot the ball, but no one pushed me to be better. No one pushed me like I consider like the NBA today. I don't know how many guys are getting better. Your superstars are, but it's comfort level, and he makes you feel uncomfortable and gets you out of your comfort zone to be better than you are, the better version of yourself. Mentally, you come to practice focused every day. You didn't have to come practice focused every day on other teams, but that's why they weren't the six-time champ, NBA champs. You didn't have to come practice not prepared, not knowing your plays every day, but that's why other teams weren't. And guys wouldn't practice every day on other teams. This man played every minute of the game, practiced every day, lifted weights every morning. He was dedicated to his craft.
Scott Burrell joining us on the Sprint People's Hotline. And Scott, you know, the basketball aside, what was it like coming and getting dropped into the middle of that Bulls circus? Because we see the way that it looks, and you've got Dennis Rodman doing what he does. You've, of course, got Michael, you've got Scotty, you've got Phil Jackson, who's a celebrity in his own right, coming from a place like Charlotte and Golden State, and then all of a sudden finding yourself in the middle of that three-ring circus. What was that adjustment like?
You didn't realize it until... You know, the first practice, well, I didn't realize it until the first practice when Phil gives out the book, Last Dance. And then it kind of, you kind of start understanding what's going on. And then when you start traveling the team, you see the rift between management and Scotty and Michael and Phil. And it got nasty. But everyone else on the plane, it didn't matter to us because that was between them. We had to do our jobs and be prepared to, when our job time was called, to do it at the best of our ability. So you saw the nastiness. But it didn't affect that team. It affected Scotty off the court. But when he went to get on the court, he was balling, and same as MJ.
Do you think that the way that management handled the situation with the team, that was the wrong way to go about it, that there could have been a seventh championship instead of a three-peat, there could have been a four-peat?
100%. There could have been a 5-6. I think all you had to do was, they were getting older, a little slower, a little beat up, just filling with other role players. I think when you have two guys or three guys like those three who are still studs at their positions, all you need is other role players to give them energy, fill in spots. But I think it could have been, especially with a shortened season after that in 98, it could have definitely been a championship. And you never know. It could have been five after that.
There's a moment in the doc in which your guys are in practice. Jordan's standing behind you, and he's kind of making a face saying, you ain't going to do nothing. And then you start your move to the middle, you go for a shot, and he blocks you like and tells you, you know, don't blah, 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 blah. When you look at that stuff, how do you feel? Is it like, oh, I remember that? Is it like, why they got me looking bad? Like, how do you feel seeing that? Because it's pretty embarrassing to look at.
It's not really embarrassing. It's the NBA. It's only 300 players that do it. So it's not really embarrassing. But to me, it's, they don't know what happened that play. Like, it was one of the first practices. It was, they're running the triangle offense. I didn't know it. So I was like, damn, two guys cut. What's my next option? And I know the shot clock's running down. So I'm like, I just got to shoot it. So I panicked and I shot it. He blocked it, but I kept playing. I mean, there's a lot worse embarrassing things I've done in my life than getting blocked by Michael Jordan or trying to learn an offense that they've run for 6 years and became six-time champions before I got there. I mean, I was trying to learn the offense and try to fit in.
And in practice, the practice pace is different in a game anyway. I mean, you moving at a different pace. When I saw the clip, the first thing I said to myself, just not even knowing what you just said, I said to myself, I said, I don't think he know what he's doing. I could just look at your body language. No, I could look at your body language and tell that you was confused.
Yes, I was. And then, you know, the shot clock's coming down. Yeah, I was just learning the offense. And after the first two guys cut, you know, there's another guy coming over the top. And so I was like, oh, man, what's the next play of this offense? So I was a step behind. So, I mean.
Yeah, you looked a little lost, though, dog. I ain't going to lie to you.
hey, honestly, I was. And that's what's funny about that play. I mean, it looks bad. But, I can get over the embarrassment of it. But I was learning the offense, and I was just trying to figure out what to do next. Yeah,
I just want to know before we let you go, Scotty. One thing you got to be honest with me, though. If he'd have put them hands on you, you was gonna fight back, right?
Of course. I mean, but it never got there.
The reason I bring that up is because MJ said he was trying to provoke you, and I kept saying, well, the way to provoke him is put your hands on him and let's see what he do.
So maybe he feared me.
Ooh.
Ooh. Ooh. There you go, Scott. There you go.
You get ready to be all over ESPN now.
Let them know.
Hey, that's fine with me. But, hey, listen, I just know he taught me something that I never learned. I haven't learned throughout my career. He brought it to me every day. I enjoyed it. And, you know, I wasn't worried about it because it never got close to that. But, I mean, of course, if you're going to defend yourself, but I wasn't Steve Kerr. He went at Steve, and it didn't happen after that.
In other words, he knew who to go after.
Know your personnel, Scott. Tell him. Know your personnel, baby.
Scott Burrell, member of that 97-98 Bulls championship team, joining us here on The Morning Show. Scott, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it.
No problem. You're welcome.
All right, you got it. There's a lot to get into. There is a lot to get into right there. We'll do that next on the morning show on 710 ESPN.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday. Social security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
So, guys, we just finished our conversation with Scott Burrell. Let's start right here. Let's go back to what Michael Jordan said in the episodes last weekend, talking about how Scott Burrell is just one of the nicest guys in the world. I could not get him to fight me. And just spending 10 minutes talking with him right there, you can see it. I mean, he is that nice of a guy that no matter what Michael did to him, short of attacking him physically, he wasn't going to engage on that level.
And I'm okay with that. I mean, that's fine. Don't pay attention. Do your job and don't pay attention to the words that's being spoken to you. And I'm okay with that. I don't have a problem with the way he approached it. You know, but people can take that kindness for weakness at times, as we've seen throughout, you know, everyday life. If a person perceives you as weak, they try to take advantage of you. And it certainly sounds like to me, just based on the end of that conversation with Scotty, that Michael took advantage of situations that he could take advantage of. And when there's people that would bite back, it was a little more difficult for Michael to get those things out of them.
Well, he's not the only one who have said that. Charles Barkley was on yesterday with Levitard, and he said that Michael knew which guys to go at.
Well, you know, you notice he has selective prosecution over there, right? He knows who to pick on. You know?
Right.
No, listen, there's certain guys you can't treat like that. Like, you have to know what guys you can treat badly, and they're going to accept it. You're screaming at guys all the time, punching guys. Come on, man. There's certain guys that will whoop the hell out of you if you try doing that. He has selective prosecution. I mean, Scott Burrell and Steve Kerr. I mean, come on, man.
That's a good point.
Well, I guess Charles Barkley already know they ain't never going to speak again. Chuck say, well, I might as well go ahead and dive on into the criticism with everybody else because we ain't gonna never talk.
It is. Does he have a point?
Well, it is.
It's that way. I've played with people in professional football that I felt was bullies, and they picked on the ones that they could pick on, but they didn't run up on the ones that would bite back. One guy that would run up on somebody would be like a Brian Cox. He didn't care who you was. You could have been the biggest, baddest, scariest, whatever. B. Cox didn't give a damn. But then there's other players that I played with, Warren Sapp, that would look to pick fights with those that wouldn't necessarily bite back, or felt like if I said something to him, he would have me, you know, put on practice squad or release. They felt that he had that type of power. So you get people that are like that. Now, do I think Michael Jordan was that way with everybody? No, because he certainly barked at Ron Harper, and Ron Harper would bark back. Mm-hmm. Scottie Pippen's going to bark back. You can't do nothing with them type of players. So he knew who to go after that needed that pushing. He pushed you. You say to yourself, "What well,
did they need the pushing key, or did they, or did he know which guys to do it to kind of puff up a little bit?"
I think some guys needed the pushing. I don't believe that Michael picked and chose who to puff on based on their, you know, them being their status, so to speak. Like Scottie mm-hmm. Pippen. He didn't need to, because Scotty, Dennis Rodman, you know, those guys are made men. You don't need to. They're following your lead. They're running in first place when you're jogging. They're getting the rebounds. They're in there pushing the weights. So you don't need to say something to them. Other guys like Scotty Burrell, you may need to say something. Will Perdue, you may need to say something to Will Perdue, because Will Perdue is just in the way. He big for no reason, so you need to hammer him. So there's certain guys that you need to hammer. That's just the reality.
I will simply say this. I've seen clips of MJ going after Starks. I've seen him go after Danny Ainge. I've seen him going after Reggie Miller. But I ain't never seen him go after a bad boy when he was trying to get through the Pistons. I don't recall him going through trying to fight any Knicks when they were fighting through the Knicks.
No, I saw clips. It was clips in there when it was clips in there with the Knicks.
Who he fight with the Knicks besides Starks?
It was conversations. I'm not gonna say fight. You mean like bickering back and forward? No, they had to separate them several times when they was with the Knicks. So I'm not gonna go as far as that. I hadn't seen the Pistons side of it, but the Knicks I certainly saw.
I've seen him go at Starks, and I've seen him go at Danny Ainge, and I've seen him going after skinny ass Reggie Miller. But I've never seen him go after any of them dudes with the Knicks or with the Pistons who are actually knocking him down. I don't recall seeing that. It may have happened.
And
I don't recall
mentality,
seeing it.
And his mentality wasn't like that when they was knocking him down in the beginning anyway. It was he took on a different mentality after he got knocked out and he finally beat the Pistons. He took on a different mentality, as if you can remember, not only in the documentary but just in general. He changed completely.
Physically, too.
He completely changed physically and mentally after he beat the Pistons.
So what happened with the Knicks?
I just told you. He went after the Knicks.
I told you he went after John Starks. Did you recall him going after anybody else?
It's funny, though.
After other people. But at the end of the day, as I would say, Michael Jordan picked his poisons based on the people that he thought needed to be pushed on his team. I don't care about other teams because people in basketball, they bark, bark, bark. Nobody ever throws blows, really. You get a handful of dudes that really throw blows. For the most part, you don't really see superstars throw blows.
Take It or Shake It is coming up next. All right, let's start with a boxing topic, Key. Mike Tyson will make a return to the ring
Take
in 2021. Take it or shake it.
Take it.
Take it.
Take it. Run with it. I'm excited to see it. Let's go. Let's go.
Anybody let's in particular go. That you want to see him fight or just anybody that's willing to get in there with him?
Raj.
Yes.
No, I want to see him fight. I bet you're
ready.
Right,
you're
going
to have to put on a little weight, Raj.
Yeah, no, I'm going to have to gain about 50 pounds.
So Mike Tyson's how much right now? Not
age?
No, he's 50-ish, but I'm talking about weight.
He's about 220-something?
His last fight, he fought at 233 pounds. His last loss.
What takes him out of the heavyweight division?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Just losing weight. You have to be a certain weight, at least
up
there.
No, I'm saying, like
what? There's no maximum.
No, what will take him out so he can fall down, drop down to the lighter weight?
Yes, under 198, right?
Yeah, super.
He's got to drop like 50 pounds.
You got to drop to cruiserweight. You're talking about cruiserweight you want him to fight at.
Is there a chance that he can do that or no?
You see that gut in that workout?
Yeah, that doesn't seem likely.
Yeah, but people are out of shape. But when you really dieting and doing your training, he could drop the pounds. He just got to work at it. But I mean, maybe heavyweight. I don't know, man. Them big old dudes. I watched that fight that time. Them big two big dudes. What was it? Tyson Fury and the other dude.
Wilder.
Wilder, man. Them dudes is huge.
Wilder's only 222, but Tyson came in close to 3. So 279. So he was huge.
All right, let's go to the next one here. Duke is concerned with what Zion Williamson is going to say. Take it or shake it.
Shake it.
Ooh, they don't care. Shake it.
Yeah, Duke got it covered. They already NC2A. This is nothing but a civil case that you wanted Zion Williams under oath to say something that can incriminate him in terms of the civil case where – all of a sudden, he's saying he didn't take money from Duke, and then they got maybe they got some trails that said he did do something with Adidas and Nike, and he lied under oath. So it is one of those situations where now you have to question what he's saying, who he is every single time. That's all it is. But if I'm Zion, I'm not telling on my organ. I'm not telling on Duke. I'm simply saying, no, they didn't give me anything. I'm not telling on Nike, and I'm not telling on Adidas. So go kick rocks.
All right, let's go to the NFL right here. A report yesterday suggested that one of the reasons that Tom Brady is in Tampa is because of a deteriorating relationship with Josh McDaniels. Brady had enough with McDaniels, take it or shake it.
Brady had enough with McDaniels or enough with the reporting?
The McDaniels.
Shake it.
Shake it.
Shake it. He doesn't buy it.
No, I don't think it's Josh McDaniels at all. I think it's germ spreaders that's looking to get some clicks and tweets and people following them on Instagram and social media and looking at their stories online, creating a story. I don't think Josh McDaniels has enough, you know, umph to go at Brady. I just don't see it. And I don't think Brady has got tired of him because Brady certainly had input in their offense and what they liked.
But that was one of the complaints is that he did not have input in the offense, according to the report. You don't buy that either.
No, because quarterbacks all have input for the most part when they're made veteran guys. They will have input in what the coach comes to you and they say, what do you like? What do you think we should do this week? Let's meet on Tuesday so we can go over the game plan. That is getting your input. You may like some things. You may not like some things. You have to be comfortable with what it is that you're running. If you're not comfortable and the offensive coordinator puts something in and you're not – it's just like a producer. Raj puts stuff in all the time that we don't like. And we simply say, no, man, we're not doing that. We are not comfortable doing it. And therefore, if we get on the air and try to execute it, it comes out bad. And that's the same thing for a quarterback.
All right, let's go to college football that both – Larry Scott, the commissioner of the Pac-12, Clay Helton mentioned it yesterday that they've discussed the possibility of playing a conference-only schedule. Some other conferences have had some similar ideas. We will see a college football season exclusively played conference opponent to conference opponent. Take it or shake it.
Take it.
He's a believer.
There's some benefits to not playing Alabama. You do understand that, right? There's some benefits.
Of course. I mean, yeah. Of course, but there's also some benefits to playing out of your conference. If you go, for instance, let's use SC. You go and you beat Notre Dame, that's a big deal.
Yeah, but it's not as big of a deal as getting waxed by Alabama on opening day. So you can avoid that. You know what I'm saying? If you need to, if there's a way to get out of it without any penalties, we might need to avoid that. I'm just saying. It may be something that we may need to avoid. So, in all seriousness, it's fine. You go back to the old format of the AP UPI type deal where the national champion is basically national championship appearances in the Final Four, or you extend it to whatever they want to extend it to. You look at the records of the teams in that conference and you make a decision based on how you thought they played to put them into the Final Four.
Yeah, with that in mind, Key, if you do play exclusively inside your conference, you would have to expand the college football playoff, take it or shake it.
I want to see it expanded anyway. I would take it.
Oh, take
all right,
it.
Go for it. Yeah.
I want to see it expanded anyway, so you might as well expand it. I'm tired of watching the Wendy's Bowl. You know, it's just like, come on, man.
I get that, but if there are no points of competition between the conferences to say that, okay, the Big Ten gets in and the Pac-10 does not, or the Pac-12 and the Big 12 is out but the ACC is in, if there's no cross-pollination between those conferences, you have to almost let all of the conferences.
But I can look at it and tell you whether or not a team is stronger than another team, even though they didn't play each other. Or they didn't play a team that the other team played. I could tell you whether or not Penn State is for real. You can look at them when they play against Ohio State, Michigan, Wisconsin, Nebraska. You can look at them and tell.
I don't know if the athletic directors in the Big Ten would take your word for it or anybody else's. You know what I mean? That if they get left out because they decide that the Pac-10 is in, they're not going to accept that.
No, but given the fact that where we're at in the world, you're going to have to accept something. Somebody going to get left out, right? I mean, that's what it is.
Unless you open it up, right?
I mean, it should be opened up anyway, though. It should be opened up to about 10 teams anyway.
Look, this is – here, how about this one? How about this one? Because of the pandemic, we're going to get some major rule changes, format changes that will stick beyond the pandemic for the better. Take it or shake it.
Take it across all
sports. Take it, amigo.
Right.
Yeah, across all sports, drafts will be held a little bit different. Drafts will still go on, those things, but people will start to use some technology. I mean, because some things have come out of this thing on the positive side for a lot of people in business in general, and they will adapt some of those things.
Look, we're going to see things like the DH come to both leagues. We're going to see things like in-season tournaments amongst the teams. We're going to see an expanded playoff format. We're going to see an expanded college football playoff format. A whole bunch of things that we'd all like to see that we knew we're going to have to wait for a very long time to get there. They're going to get accelerated because of what we're dealing with right now.
The DH was already talked about and coming into play. They just haven't gotten there yet, but this will push it over the edge a little bit, and it'll probably stick.
All right, one more. Charles Barkley and Shaquille O'Neal both say that the NBA should cancel their season. They know something the rest of us don't. Take it or shake it.
Shake it.
Shake it.
Yeah, they wouldn't be the only ones. You know, think about it. They're in the NBA. They cover TNT. They said what they said because that's probably what they believe. But they wouldn't be the only two people that got that information. And there's nobody else that's saying that other than those two. If you start to tell me that Woj says it or Ramona comes out and says it, now all of a sudden that's a different message. But those two prominent Hall of Fame players are saying it doesn't mean they have something that nobody else knows. I don't think the commissioner in the NBA is going to tell them but not tell anybody else.
LZ, you think they have inside info?
I think they're reading some tea leaves that maybe some reporters aren't able to have access to. I think the timing of them both saying this very close to each other leads me to believe that something that they've encountered has led them to come to this place. You know, anyone who knows their show knows the two of them typically are on opposite ends of opinions on a lot of things. But for both of them to both be saying kind of the same thing near the same time does make me wonder if they've been privy to some information other people haven't.
All right, we've seen a lot about Michael Jordan, the baseball player, in the last couple of episodes. We're going to talk with Jim Bowden, who made his living evaluating baseball players. That's going to come up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.